Not your keys, not your coins. Crypto on an exchange is no different than money in a bank. It's simply not yours.
This to me is sort of a shocking revelation. At the same time, I understand the network effect of the dollar is massive, and it's kind of hard to evade that as a large nation.
The cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows it. There's no hiding it anymore. When people tell you who they are, believe them. And this is one of those maybe oops moments, but yeah, monopoly money.
Where are these people gonna go? Well, I mean, we're going to be in Panama soon, and Panama is one of the greatest destinations for anyone who values, you know, freedom, Bitcoin, and building a life of abundance. So I suspect we're going to see an uptick in Dutch people here very, very soon.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Greer and Tony here with me. Gents, let's jump right into the news. So we've got Coinbase, first of all, saying that many users currently are unable to buy, sell, or transfer crypto. This was a couple of days ago. Around the same time, though, I saw this article. So BlockFills, it's a crypto lender that I had not heard of before, but they've got their US-based 2,000 institutional clients. They handle $60 billion in 2025 trading. Basically, they said, yeah, sorry, you can't withdraw. To me, it feels like paper Bitcoin is out in full force. There are always these games being played whenever there's a big dip or a big pump. Tony, what's your take? What's the message you send to the customer base of these companies and to anyone who's maybe been dabbling with exchanges a little too much?
Yeah, man, this is a self-inflicted heart attack, and I hope it's a lesson. That not your keys, not your coins. You know, crypto on an exchange is no different than money in a bank. It's simply not yours. So whenever there's panic, you know, out there and people freak out and they want to withdraw their money, well, you know, you have these unexpected events where all of a sudden the off button is pressed and you have no more access to what you thought you owned. And that's a very, very scary place to be, especially if you've got, you know, a considerable amount of your savings or your wealth on these platforms thinking, you know, you're going to be okay. Well, here's the newsflash. You are not. In some cases so far, you know, these platforms have reopened. But essentially what happens is that you have something similar to like a bank run on the platform where everybody wants to withdraw everything. And of course, some of these platforms don't necessarily have what they've sold, right? And so when everybody withdraws, then they have a problem. And this is what historically has led to the collapse of previous platforms. Like if you recall FTX, something similar happened where people, you know, just went in and wanted to take everything out. And of course, they didn't have it. And then boom. So these are bad signs. And Binance was, you know, doing the same thing not that long ago either. So all of these centralized exchanges, these are not places to store your wealth. If you have a specific use case for them, you know, do it, but you're in and out. These should be stepping stones, not final destinations by any stretch. The only place you should be to sleep well at night is, first of all, in Bitcoin, the only money that is money, and in full self-custody where you control the keys and are not dependent on anyone or any, you know, insane scenario that you can't control.
So obviously, I don't think of Bitcoin as an investment. I don't trade it, but this is like one of these other, there are a lot of people who do. I mean, in reality, this is one of those sort of risks that a lot of people forget about. They understand, or maybe they've begun to understand, okay, there's a confiscation risk, not your keys, not your coins. But in a worst case scenario, like, hey, I want to liquidate before the price drops further, or I want to sell at a top, you know, which I don't encourage. You just don't have that optionality. Like at least with Bitcoin in self-custody, you can go to a Bitcoin-only exchange, someone like River, who is operational all the time and they're not shutting down because of a pump or a dip, and you can go sell and trade there. When you rely on one of these unreliable exchanges, I mean, you're just completely at their mercy. And they've proven time. I mean, how many times have we talked about this, Greer? Like five times over the last six, eight months, like Coinbase has something happen?
Yeah, you're just asking for pain. And I think look at the reputation. Look at, you know, Coinbase spent $20 million on a Super Bowl ad that was mocked relentlessly on social. And I think it's because their customer service isn't just bad. It's also the UX. There's nothing that makes someone a Bitcoin maximalist more than not being able to control your money. And when you use Coinbase or Robinhood or another exchange and they remove the buy button or keep you from accessing your account or, you know, the app is down, that forces you to understand what Bitcoin in self-custody is. So I think the silver lining here is that these circumstances make people ask questions. Why can't I spend my money? Why can't I withdraw my coins? Why can I only withdraw a certain amount? And it, you know, over time, I think we're this is how maximalists are made. You want your Bitcoin on an air-gapped cold wallet that doesn't touch the internet. And, you know, what we're seeing here, I think, are people slowly learning that fact.
The other benefit of self-custody, air-gapped hardware wallet, is that your tendency to go do things, it's a little less convenient to go move your Bitcoin around. And that alone, I think, is a huge psychological advantage, that if you're like, oh, I'm not at home, I can't go do this right now, or I'm not sitting at my computer, like the temptation to go play the markets, I think, goes away. And by the time you get back to your computer, you do have access to your hardware wallet. You're like, I don't, you know, the market's kind of settled a little bit, because these things happen. And, you know, over a couple of hours, we see a crash and then it kind of stabilizes. Like, that's just how it goes. I just pulled this up, by the way. Coinbase missed their Q4 estimates. This was yesterday. Reporting $667 million losses. Revenue fell 20%. So while I appreciate that Coinbase is a publicly traded company, so they have to report all of this stuff, like, this is who you're playing ball with. Like, they, and by the way, I don't know how you lose money when you're basically earning your revenue on people just trading shit coins all the time. Like, to me,
that's what's worrisome.
Yeah. It's like, this feels like it could be the most passive business in America. Like, just, you know, have a couple of developers list new shit coins, let people trade them, and you just sit back and relax. I know they've got their custodial Coinbase Prime and all that. Maybe there's more involvement there, but this feels to me like a business AI could run. And, you know, Brian Armstrong's just the spokesperson. So
they would have been so much better if they had just stayed with Bitcoin. They a considerable amount less because they chose to, you know, dabble in and sell all these crypto shit coins.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Short term, Brian Armstrong's made a ton of fiat off of all of this. I mean, the business model has worked for him personally. Over the next decade, they're going to completely fade to irrelevance, because honestly, like, you know, this is not someone I simp for, but like the sailors of the world who have been like accumulating Bitcoin are going to be in a position to offer financial services. Not that we're cheering this on, but they're going to be in a position to offer financial services that actually matter, that people want or need. And Coinbase is just going to, like, they probably have a fart coin treasury, is for all I know. I mean, it's insane.
Stinks.
I know, man. Anyway, we could talk about that all day. Okay, guys. So just in Russia, I've seen this in a few places, so I assume that the rumors are true. I don't know if this will actually happen, but Russia is considering rejoining the U.S. dollar settlement system. So we, during the early days of the war with Ukraine, obviously they had their U.S. assets frozen and basically said enough of that. We've talked actually on and off the show about them accepting Bitcoin, I think maybe crypto, but probably mostly Bitcoin, in exchange for their natural resources, the products that Russia creates. This to me is sort of a shocking revelation. At the same time, I understand the network effect of the dollar is massive, and it's kind of hard to evade that as a large nation. But Tony, what do you think's going on here?
Man, this is like was really like big news to me when I read it, because if it's true, it tells me several things. Either one, that this whole, you know, debacle about Russia wanting to exit the U.S. dollar was just a show for entertainment purposes, or if this is the case, then this is a major sign of weakness, considering what Russia went through when the U.S. weaponized the dollar against them, you know, sanctioned them, and, you know, they were seizing, you know, funds left, right, and center from all sorts of oligarchs and what have you. Like, they literally put them through hell. And for them to concede reconsidering going back to the U.S. dollar, like, to me, it's just insane. If somebody has treated you this bad, you would go to all length to find ways to never put yourself back into that predicament, unless it was all for show, right? So I don't know how legit this thing is, but if it is, to me, it's just bad all around.
Yeah, I think it was, I was looking for this. I think Peter St. Ange was, I saw him say, and just like that, BRICS was over or something to that effect. I think what Putin does not trust the dollar, right? I mean, no one trusts the dollar anymore, but they also don't trust each other, which is the challenge. Like China and Russia have this alliance and everything, but like they both know that they're operating in their own self-interest. They can't trust the other person's currency. India, South Africa, I mean, they're all in the same boat. The US dollar to me is like the path of least resistance in the short term. But at the end of the day, the fact that they're flip-flopping, looking for who they can trust, how they can operate, to me, signals Bitcoin. Like over a long enough time horizon, it just becomes inevitable. It is the monetary gunpowder that Saifedean describes. And that's where we end up regardless. Greer.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. My first thought also was, you know, what does this do to BRICS? You know, if Russia's not part of it, you're losing a major player. And I was also surprised. And yeah, we're trying to parse out what this means. And I think what you highlight as countries not being able to trust each other, you know, they've tried using their own foreign currencies for trade. And, you know, it's sort of silly examples here and there, but it doesn't really work well. And we know that Bitcoin and unfortunately stable coins are the future. And so perhaps, you know, these types of agreements happen without the plebs being privy to the information. We don't get invited into the back rooms, which is why we're surprised, you know, because we've been just drinking up all the narratives. But I think there's probably a lot of economic commonalities between the US and Russia. There's trade deals, there's infrastructure, there's energy. You know, the writing on the wall for Europe is that they're going to be completely broken. And I think Russia sees that as an opportunity for themselves. So, you know, maybe it's a temporary measure. But I think the key takeaway is, you know, everything is unexpected until it really materializes. So, you know, I think we'll just have to wait and see how this plays out. It sounds like it's a little bit questionable at the moment.
And for the time being, this could be a temporary measure Russia's taking. Maybe it offers, I don't know, just sort of a lubricant for their economy in the short term. But it doesn't mean that they can't accept Bitcoin. It doesn't mean that they can't accept yuan or anything else. So it does not necessarily mean that they're just going back to the dollar, and that's it. All righty. Am I getting feedback, guys? I'm thinking I'm hearing something. Okay. Hopefully it stops. Okay, guys, this is big news. And Greer, I want you to take this one first because you were talking offline about sort of the younger generation. So it says Cash App declares war on the banking system with zero fees. So just for context, I mean, 58 million users. I think I saw like 50% of Gen Z uses Cash App at least once a month. 2 million followers, and what they've introduced is basically zero fees. No fees on large Bitcoin purchases over 2K, no fees on recurring purchases, so dollar cost averaging, no fees on payments over the Lightning Network, higher withdrawal limits. Every Bitcoin you custody is one-to-one, no rehypothecation, no fractional reserve. Says read that last point again. I'm assuming that they're either showing proof of reserves or there's some reason that we should believe that. I don't tend to assume that's the case, but big moves. And if you look at you know, Coinbase charging 1-2% fees, Kraken, Binance, everyone makes money on every transaction. Sort of what we were talking about. Like this is the business model for most of these exchanges. To me, and Greer, I want you to give your thoughts as someone who's got kids sort of age to use this kind of thing. This is like how mainstream normie America is going to be onboarded into Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we're seeing a very macro battle happen between the asset managers and between banks. And this is just downstream of that. You know, Cash App is an asset manager if they're holding people's Bitcoin. And yeah, teens use Cash App probably by a wide margin. You know, my two teens, they don't have bank accounts, but they do have Cash App and they can use it to pay for anything wherever they go with friends and whatnot. So, you know, this is the future. The future is going to be how do the payment rails become native, and especially in a mobile environment. You know, yes, my kids learned how to write a check when they're in school in junior high, but they're not writing checks. They don't have bank accounts. And there are so many different apps where you can do your banking from your mobile device. So this is the future. I think 58 million customers is just a massive amount of people using the app. You can buy Bitcoin with it. You can buy stocks. You can have your savings. You know, it's this is mobile finance, and it is for the future, for the digital age. So, you know, I think when you look at what's happening here, like I said, this is a microcosm of what's happening at the highest scales. When you talk about the Clarity Act, who wins? It's going to be the asset managers. It's not going to be the banks.
I wish it would be a more cypherpunk solution, but I understand that that's just not the reality of our world. And so in the meantime, I'm going to cheer on the fact that your everyday person can start, you know, buying a few bucks of Bitcoin a week or you know, having access to pay with no fees. I mean, to me, that is massive. It makes it seamless to go buy a burger at Steak and Shake and begin living something like a Bitcoin standard. Tony.
Yeah, this is the signal that everybody should be focusing on, man. I mean, this is the type of news that, you know, should skyrocket Bitcoin into the millions, because this is where it proves that, you know, incorruptible, uncensorable money is going mainstream. It's not the narratives about, you know, the price charts and the number go up that matter, or, you know, assuming that Bitcoin is a trade or a stock that you need to speculate and take leverage on. This is where, you know, this is the bad messaging that a lot of folks are still falling into. But the real signal is, you know, our stories like this, where, you know, regular folks now have like the easiest access to understanding that Bitcoin is the future of money. Now, sure, this is still via a third-party custodian, but, you know, that's part of the journey. It's a transition. It's baby steps into the final destination. At least it gets people aware that this is a viable option now. And, you know, as more people get accustomed to, you know, blindly using it, this is going to explode. I mean, we're going to see a lot more of these solutions come into the market. And eventually, you know, like as more people adopt it, the fine tuning of these apps, you know, will come about. I think we'll start seeing a lot more privacy focused apps on Bitcoin, but this is definitely bullish as far as I'm concerned.
Completely agree. I think if there is a Trojan horse, it's this sort of application.
Absolutely.
Right? It just makes it so much easier for you to go orange pill your friend and be like, you know what? I could walk you through 50 things that you're not going to care about, or maybe a little too technical. Like, just download Cash App. You already have it. Go buy some.
Right? All your contacts are there too. Like, think about your bank account. If you have to add someone as a bill pay option, it's a pain in the ass. You know, but with Cash App, all your friends are right there. So I agree with you guys. It's a baby step. I think if Cash App were ever to restrict your withdrawals from Bitcoin, or, you know, and they do have KYC, but that's where the friction comes in and you start looking for more sovereign solutions.
We're very close to a sovereign style Cash App. And like a lot of the hot wallets and everything are already easy to use in that. But just probably less accessible for like the everyday activities of many people. So I think it's pretty cool. All righty, guys, up next. So this is a Larry Fink quote, okay? Larry Cantillon Fink, okay? He says that interest on the U.S. debt is ultimately what's predicted to destroy the U.S. economy, that debt payments will eventually grow out of control, the dollar will be abandoned because it essentially turns into monopoly money. A fair amount of folks believe the U.S. debt is already out of control, which is why they're swapping to actual long-term assets like precious metals, nuclear goods, or refinement. And I would add Bitcoin. He didn't say that, but I think he probably senses that. He has a very successful product in the Bitcoin ETFs. Of all the people to call the U.S. dollar monopoly money, like the guy who's made the most U.S. dollars of all, you know, like of the last 50 years, Tony. Do you think he's trying to like send a signal? Is this benevolence coming out in Larry Fink trying to warn the normies?
This was not on my bingo card this morning, man. I mean, for someone like that to say something like this, he must have been listening to Bitcoin banter, you know, at some point, because we've been calling the U.S. dollar monopoly money for 3 years now. So if he reminds me of that bomb diffuser, right? Like, you know, if you see a bomb diffuser running, you better be right behind him because something's about to break in a really bad way. But yeah, I completely echo his sentiment. The dollar is done. They know it. Everybody who's paying attention know it. And the only way to protect yourself is really to be completely off that chessboard. And as far as I'm concerned, there's only one option, thankfully, that exists. Because otherwise, you know, precious metals, I mean, okay. They're like, you know, an okay thing, but definitely not the way to go in a digital world. So to me, Bitcoin, the incorruptible, uncensorable monetary system, is going to be the future of everybody's money. And I think he sees it. He's just not, you know, labeling it specifically for whatever, you know, reasons he may have. But just read between the lines, man. It's crystal clear.
Yeah. I don't think he fully wants to telegraph it. He's got a business to run, more money to make. But yeah, to me, it's Greer, if you've seen the there's like it's not a meme, but like it's a picture that has gone around of like the instructions for Monopoly, like how the bank operates in Monopoly.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's our dollar system.
That's like yeah, real life today. Yeah. I mean, I blame our debt situation on Congress. It's the people who are spending the money, and it's the Federal Reserve who's printing it. And I just, you know, what are we going to do about that? We have $38 trillion in debt that's never going to get repaid. And I think everyone watching this channel knows that it's just going to get inflated away. So, yeah, it will be monopoly money. And if you hold assets, you know, your personal debt gets cheaper over time as that happens. But, you know, I think you'll be protected. So, you know, the cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows it. There's no hiding it anymore. You know, I think when people tell you who they are, believe them. And this is one of those maybe oops moments. But yeah, monopoly money. What are we going to do about it? You know, probably just start over with some kind of stable coin that's backed by the United States. And then you'll have Bitcoin as the alternative. So
I just I can't piece together with the stablecoin thing, though. Like we've talked about this a lot, and I agree with you guys. Like, it is the CBDC, and part of the reason it's the CBDC is because the U.S. government is completely incompetent. Like, they don't have the chops to build technology that's going to actually work for people to pay. It's going to be much more expedient for them to use Tether, for example, and say like, okay, this is the thing we're going to co-opt. This is the dollar. You still have the situation, though, where you have $38 trillion worth of debt, and you know, one USDT represents $1. Like, it's not like the problem goes away. I'm not clear how they make that transition and reduce the pain. Like, all it does is increase the pain, because now there's more surveillance, but we still have the debt problem. You know, I don't know if either of you have a comment on that.
I think what they do is they force the rest of the world to use, let's just say it's Tether. I mean, the rest of the world's already using Tether. So Tether now has to purchase, and every stablecoin, they all purchase a treasury. So now you have infinite demand for U.S. treasuries. So you can use that to pay down the debt. And, you know, I think that's how they do it. It's not that they are actually paying it back. They're just shifting the burden onto the rest of the world.
That sounds about right. All righty, guys. Last up, this is here's the compelling case for your plan B if you've been holding out on this or anything. Netherlands passes a 36% tax on unrealized gains. They were expected to do this, but basically I've seen a lot of folks in the Netherlands who are like, hey guys, where should I go? You know, like I've got Bitcoin, I've got property, I've got, you know, all this stuff that basically they're going to take over a third of it in terms of value each year. And I haven't liquidated, like it's unrealized. I don't even know how I'm going to pay this. So I see a huge millionaire, billionaire exodus from the Netherlands. Tony, let's kick this around for a few minutes, because I know you're going to be onboarding some folks soon into Plan Bs in Panama.
Yeah, man. When you have desperate parasites that run out of money, you know, what's the next move is find ways to steal more money. Except this is going to alienate all the intelligent people in the Netherlands, and it's going to get them to pack their bags, you know, in the next few days and give these worthless people the middle finger. It's happened in many other countries. Norway was one of them, you know, a few years ago, where the high net worth individuals, they left because of something stupid like this, and they never came back. And so the end result was the country ended up making less tax income that they had, you know, because of this foolish decision. And where are these people going to go? Well, I mean, we're going to be in Panama soon. And Panama is one of the greatest destinations for anyone who values, you know, freedom, Bitcoin, and building a life of abundance. So I suspect we're going to see an uptick in Dutch people here very, very soon.
if you, Tony, cut me off if you don't want me saying this, but if you had, if you were dollar, one way to avoid this, I guess, to some degree in the short term is if you were dollar cost averaging at 125 and now we're down at, I don't even know what we're at, 60 something, take your losses, circle that into non-KYC Bitcoin, because most people are probably buying on an exchange. And then there's no verifiable way to prove that you have the Bitcoin. And, you know, it could be a short-term solution for people saying, I don't want to pay a third of my wealth that I haven't liquidated to the government each year. But Greer, I don't know if you have any comments on the Netherlands.
I do. I have a very shiny tinfoil hat for this one, if you want to hear it.
Okay, let's
and
go.
I think what's interesting is that the Netherlands is home to a company called ASML, and they have a near 90% monopoly over the advanced chip industry. And so while we're focused on, you know, the Bitcoiners who are going to have to sell or move or relocate, I think this is really about going after one of the largest companies who's providing, you know, this essential technology for the future. And so what does it force them to do? They either have to pay debt to pay back the taxes, or they can sell the company. And I think that we will see some of these large companies get broken up and sold off and purchased by private equity or other interests that are extremely large. And I think this is kind of the opposite of what China has been trying to do in Taiwan, where they want to go in and get the Taiwanese semiconductor companies. I think this is my tinfoil hat. But I think it's going after the chip market in this country. And yes, everyone else is getting caught up in this, but they don't care. That's not the target. The target is the most valuable company in the world that has a monopoly right now.
So you're saying this is all about control.
That's I am.
Amazing. Yes. Fascinating. I wouldn't have predicted that from politicians, but... All righty, guys. I think that's a good place to wrap up. Thank you guys both for hopping on. For everyone who tuned in, really appreciate you joining. Leave a comment, by the way. I want to hear if you agree with Greer that this is like some sort of conspiracy, because that would be an interesting...
They're always conspiracies.
there's always something. All righty. Thank you guys again. We'll be back. Stick around if you're listening for another minute. You can hear a bit about the Bitcoin way, how we can help you with some of these things, and look forward to being back with you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want to back up in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.